Kane accompanied Ambika down another elevator, this one hidden in her own opulent suite of rooms. He'd only gotten a brief glimpse of the rooms as they'd passed through. Three of Ambika's sectmen accompanied them, keeping a careful distance between Kane and their warrior queen, as if he might offer some danger. In spite of that, he retained his weapons. He was also aware that Ambika had deliberately split him off from the rest of his group. At the bottom of the drop, the elevator doors opened. The brine stink of the sea filled the dark cavern before them. With the limited light available, he didn't know how big the cavern actually was. Ambika led the way outside onto a metal platform. She flipped a series of switches. Mercury vapor lights exploded into harsh brightness, running quickly from the front of the cavern to the back. Kane stared at the huge object being revealed in the water. Maybe the cavern had started out as a natural structure, but it had been enlarged with machines. Now it was a harbor, except that there appeared to be no way out. The object in the water was a submarine, but the flotation equipment surrounding it kept the gaping hole on the port side from sending it back to the depths. Pockets of dark rust showed like metallic age spots on the hull.
Do you know what this is?
A pre-dark submarine.
You've seen one before.
Not firsthand.
This one's Chinese. Old by far, even when the Newt cost of 2001 occurred. It was first made in the early 1960s, part of the Cold War buildup that was going on then. You're aware of that war?
It wasn't actually a war. It was more of an escalating defense.
True, but it also neared all-out war on a number of occasions. Do you know of the missile crisis of October of 1962?
President Kennedy ordered Fidel Castro to get Russian missiles out of Cuba that year, or he'd invade Cuba.
Close enough. As you're no doubt aware, several tactical maneuvers were made on both sides. This submersible, a Chinese sub called Octopus Lotus, was part of that action. At that time, the sub was loaded down with deadly nerve gas and biological agents. It was on its way across the Pacific Ocean to join the action in Cuba.
The Russians and Chinese were both communist countries, but they didn't work together, not on something like that.
But they weren't going to work together, Kane. Octopus Lotus's mission was to surface off the southern coast of Florida and release the deadly weapons it carried. They were going to let the Russians and Cubans take the blame.
They wanted to start a war?
Kane couldn't believe it. The whole concept of nerve gas and biological weapons smacked too much of the macabre practices of the Archons. Maybe it had been an early attempt to destroy the civilized world.
Think forward a little more in time, Kane, to see the beauty of it. Both the U.S. and Russia were gaining dominance militarily, as well as economically. The Chinese would have stood to gain years on their competitors if a war broke out. And they would have been sought after as an ally, allowing them a much better position than they'd have had otherwise.
And they could have waited long enough to figure out who the victor was going to be.
Yes. Most of the work they'd been doing in the field of nerve gas and other biological agents had closely paralleled the research done by the Russians. It would have taken days or weeks for competent researchers to find out the agents had actually been Chinese in origin. By then, it would have been too late.
But the sub didn't make it?
No. The American military found out and sent destroyers out to intercept it. They did.
They took the chance on spreading that shit in the ocean?
According to the reports my father found and read in the Totality Concept files, the American ships depth-charged the Octopus Lotus and got it nearly up to the surface. But help arrived too soon to remove the biological weapons from the submarine. They had to settle for sending a team of frogmen down to intercept it and sink it. They succeeded at that.
Kane thought about the implications involved in the story. First, about the leverage that the weapons gave Ambika. And second, about how the submarine had come here to the Western Isles, and to the Isles of the Lioness in particular.
How did you get the sub?
While my father and I were setting up the gasoline plants down in Mexico, we discovered the Octopus Lotus, washed ashore after a sea quake. We spent months getting it afloat, then pulling it back here.
What about the weapons? After all those years at sea, they shouldn't have survived.
Several of the sub's compartments survived intact. They're built to be airtight. The aft compartments holding the biological weapons remained that way, but we didn't try to open them there. My father knew that some of the containers might have ruptured, so we worked with the submersible seals. We drilled through the plates here under very strict conditions. Then we extracted the gases and liquids, sealing them up in other containers. We left the submersible here.
Why?
We couldn't get into some of the compartments safely enough, and some of the compartments maintain a biological residue that's quite deadly by itself. It's a bomb, Kane. One which I can transport as I see fit. Should the day come, I could float the Octopus Lotus into Kang's holdings and explode it, releasing all the toxins into his communities.
A cold chill rocketed along the base of King's skull, exploding when it touched his mind. The woman talked of massive, sudden, horrifying death as if it were nothing.
So, when you talk to your friend, you might tell him I'm planning on being very equal.
She walked back down the gangplank, stopping near Kane, close enough that he could feel her heat in the chill of the cavern.
I'm telling you this, Kane, to show you what I'm capable of. To prove to you that it is possible to stand beside me and have more power than you've ever known before.
With effort, Kane restrained himself from reacting. Biological weapons weren't something he'd ever want to see used. The technology involved reminded him of his father and how he'd been used to service the Barons.
That's why I'm building up my army here. The Utah territories are going to allow me to establish a beachhead that I can use to launch attacks on Cobaltville. The Baron can hide behind his steel walls from blasters and knives, but microscopic germs? No.
If you use those things against him, you're going to render that area uninhabitable.
For a time, perhaps.
Maybe for a long time.
I can afford to wait, Kane. My father designed me to be better than human. You've seen how my body reacts to wounds. It builds new cells where diseased or injured ones were. It ages more slowly than others do, so my store of experience is greater than others. I know my lifespan is easily longer than a normal person's. How much longer? I don't know. I've already lived longer than the condition of my body would indicate. I've told you I've denied certain passions for most of my life. That's been longer than you might think.
Where are the biological weapons you've taken from the sub?
In safekeeping. I'm not going to allow anyone to stop me, Kane. I'll have you know that. I was born and bred to rule, and I will.
Then why haven't you broken Kang before now?
Haven't you ever studied Sun Tzu?
I haven't committed him to memory.
He was Chinese, so Kang would probably appreciate this. One of the cardinal rules in his treatise on waging and winning wars is never to take on a war you couldn't win. Fighting Kang would definitely require using the germs I've rescued. Using those weapons would endanger my own holdings here, maybe destroy the whole infrastructure of the ecological and economic systems that I'm depending on. Using them against Cobaltville makes better sense.
Because you have the bolt hole in the Hidden Redoubt, it makes a more controllable test area.
Yes. And the effects will be restricted to an area that won't touch the Western Isles. You see how easy it is for you to understand what I'm planning, Kane? We could be good together, and you could be a king.
After Cobaltville knuckles under, you're free to build another army there.
Exactly. And it'll be an army hidden from Kang's prying eyes. Then, when the time is right, I'll move that army through the gateway and add Kang's empire to my own, with less bloodshed than it would take now. Kang respects superiority in numbers. By that time, many people will have joined me. Kang will give up, if he's not already dead by then.
Kane hoped the smile curving his lips didn't look too forced.
Ambitious.
Totally ruthless. I can do this.
If anybody could, I think it would be you.
She faced him squarely, arms folded across her breasts, less than an inch between them. Her blue Kevlar armor reflected the lights.
So, what do you say to my offer now, Kane? You see that I'm going to rule.
Ignoring the way his stomach tried to roll when he thought of what she was planning to do, he grinned at her, then reached for her, catching her off guard. He kissed her long and deep, feeling her passion build as his subterfuge began to work, and allowing the lust he felt for her to increase bit by bit with every heartbeat. The guards overreacted, shoving their blasters in his face as they hauled him back. He went back and down on purpose, allowing the Sekhmen to control his fall.
Ah! Don't touch him!
Ambika drew her sword and cleaved the head from the man's shoulders. The headless corpse crumpled. The other Sekhmen sprang back, obviously confused about what they were supposed to do. Kane sat with his back against the cavern wall. He wiped the blood from his cheek, glancing at the redness staining his fingertips. Ambika stood towering above him, the sword tight in her fist. Her eyes blazed volcanic blue.
What's your answer, Kane?
I thought that said it best. Maybe I was wrong.
She stared at him a moment longer, then the full lips formed an uncertain smile.
I wish I knew you better. I wish I knew when you were telling the truth and when you were lying.
You made the offer.
Yeah, but you turned me down.
Then. Not now.
Why?
You asked me why I stayed with the guy I work for. He promised me a barony of my own, years ago. So far, nothing. I've waited long enough.
So that's the only reason you'd want me?
Hell, Ambika, you knew back at the ship that I wanted you. I told you that.
Then why didn't you come to me?
Because I don't like to be conflicted. I can be on one side or I can be on another, but I can't be on both. That game's too dangerous.
Show me again which side you're on.
He pushed himself up and went to her, taking her in his arms. The guard stood nervously by. His lips sought hers, and he gave himself over to the intoxication she presented. Her body was enough to set his senses on fire. Beth Lee Rauch had never held this kind of threat over him, or this much attraction, although there were similarities between them. As he kissed her, blood beat in his temples, pushing his senses into overdrive. Her hand drifted down between them, finding him hard and ready. She trembled in his arms then. Kane was surprised at the reaction. She broke the kiss, her hand still clutching him with a fierce eagerness.
Enough.
Her eyes speared his challengingly, and her stance remained ready. She looked as if she would let Kane take her right there if the guards had been absent. She released her hold and backed away a step.
I've never felt like this.
Me either.
He didn't recall ever having this kind of effect on a woman. It was a compelling sensation, and it dared his male ego to take advantage of it. Kane tried not to think of Bridget, so the guilt wouldn't eat at him.
Meet me in my rooms. I want to be ready.
When?
An hour. Go back to your quarters. I'll send for you. And Kane, if you're not ready this time, I will kill you.
I'll be ready.
Kane sat in his suite with his mag helmet, hoping the comlink worked. If it didn't, he was going to have to find Grant. It was stretching the odds a lot to think that Grant would be sitting in his room waiting for Kane to call. He carried the helmet into the bathroom, turned on the shower to help foil any listening devices here in Ambika's lair, pulled on the helmet and activated the comlink.
Grant.
Yeah?
Didn't know if you'd be there.
Nothing else to do in this place now that we're at the bitch queen's disposal.
You don't like her?
No. Woman that would go to the trouble of building a bridge out of people's bones kind of hits me funny. It's one thing to be thorough, but it's another to glory in it.
I know, but it gets worse. She's got a pre-dark sub full of biological warfare agents that she means to hit Cobaltville with to take everybody out.
Shit. That's gonna be more trouble than even Lakesh is counting on. How close is she to being ready to use it?
Weeks, months, a year or two. She didn't say and I didn't ask. The fact that it's there at all is what we have to deal with. Plus, I get the feeling that we're not going to be allowed to leave these islands anyway.
I got the same impression. So, what are we going to do?
I'm going to take Ambika. She says she wants me bad. If I can get her inside her rooms, maybe she'll let her guard down.
You think you can do that?
I'm willing to try. I need you to back my play. Get Domi and Bridget together. I don't want us spread out when we push this.
A one percenter.
It's the only play that will work.
I know, but that woman isn't like any other you've ever met, Kane. She's hard and vicious, and she'll chill you in a heartbeat if she thinks she needs to. In a lot of ways, she reminds me of you. Especially when you're convinced that what you're doing is right. And I don't think this bitch has experienced a minute in her life when she didn't think what she was doing was exactly right.
Well, maybe we'll find out how good we really are. Meet me outside her doors in 40 minutes.
I'll be there.
Kane took the helmet off, breaking the radio communication. He tried to relax. He stripped quickly and got into the shower, feeling the minutes slipping away. Grant got to Domi's room first. Sec men were posted in the halls, so he knew getting out of the rooms was going to be dicey. He knocked on the door and waited. Domi answered the door totally nude. A smile lighted her face when she saw him.
Come inside and play?
No. Get dressed. This is about to turn ugly.
What are the odds?
Grant turned from her door and walked down to Bridget's. He knocked and waited. There was no answer. He checked his cron, watching the time wind inexorably down. He knocked again as Domi joined him. The door remained unanswered. A bad feeling twisted through Grant's stomach. He opened the door and stepped inside. His eyes swept the small room, taking in the overturned furniture and obvious signs of struggle. Kane was walking into Ambika's rooms, thinking he had a handle on the situation.
Oh, damn.
Grant grabbed Bridget's Uzi and spare magazines, then hustled out of the room, moving toward the elevator, hoping no one stopped him from going to Kane's rooms. He knew he wouldn't catch Kane there, but he had to get the mag armor Kane was going to need. If any of them lived. Kane stood outside the main door to Ambika's rooms. Nervous energy roiled in his stomach. He'd dressed in the clothes Ambika had sent down for him. Form-fitting, yet comfortable, and, he couldn't help but notice, easily removable.
Come in.
The door opened soundlessly, and he walked through the huge suite to her bedroom. It was dark when he arrived, and he fully expected to find Ambika there. The covers were turned back, all azure lace and satin, but the bed was empty.
Kane, over here.
He turned, spotting her out on the balcony that overlooked her empire. Beyond her, the night sky was dark as sin and cluttered with dozens of stars. The moonlight spread fire across her silvery mane as it ran free, blowing slightly in the wind.
Join me.
Kane strode over to her, feeling the pulse beat in his temples, echoing throughout his body. He felt hypnotized, sailing along on autopilot. She wore a wispy black gossamer nightdress that was translucent, held closed in front by only a single fastening, revealing the smooth, curving flesh beneath.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
The only thing that looked out of place was the huge Kasul pistol in her right hand. She gestured with the hand blaster, not quite ever pointing it at him.
We're alone. No guards. And I don't quite trust you. You're a man of strong convictions. I knew that about you from the moment I saw you, Kane. It was one of the things that most attracted me to you. But you knew that, didn't you?
When he took a step closer to her right side, she moved reflexively, keeping the Kasul a safe distance from his reach.
I don't know why you're attracted to me, but if all this changes me too much, is what you have left going to be enough to keep you satisfied?
Are you thinking about a relationship, Kane, or the power I've offered you?
With you, I don't think I'm going to get one without the other.
You're probably right. You say what you think, and that's another thing I find appealing about you. Come here, Kane.
That blaster is going to make things complicated.
Let me worry about the blaster. I want you to worship me, to take my body and show me how it makes you feel. Prove this newfound love you say you have for me.
I didn't say love, but I'm definitely working on lust, and I don't think you can tell me that it's anything more than that for you.
Lust is a good place to start, don't you think?
From what I've seen, that's where most relationships start. Problem is, that's also where most of them end.
Kane moved toward her and started to reach for her.
Stop.
She kept the Kasul out of his reach, and then used her other hand to run over his body, searching for weapons and purposely exciting him further.
No weapons.
Just the one blunt instrument.
She reached for his hard length, stroking it playfully.
Worship me, Kane. I want you to show me your desire.
He took her into his arms, pulling her close and ignoring the Kasul's cold barrel as it pressed into his ribcage on a level with his heart. He thought there was a chance he could knock the blaster away before she could shoot him, but the chance was too damn small to take. He also considered pushing her over the balcony behind her, but figured she stood too much of a chance of dragging him after her. He concentrated on her body, letting his savage impulses follow their own design, hoping that the sensations flooding her body would break her concentration on the blaster. He ran his hands over her, slipping them from her waist to her buttocks, through the satin nightdress. He kneaded her flesh, letting her feel the power in his hands. Her breath warmed his neck as her own desire filled her, pushing against the dam of control she maintained. All he needed was one moment of distraction.
Feel me, Kane.
It wasn't just her control that was slipping. His hands rose to caress her breasts. Still, the Kasul remained steadily pressed against his chest. He trailed his fingers over the flat plane of her stomach, letting them fall to the silvery thatch between her legs. She trembled, the blaster moving aside a little, as he slid his fingers further between her legs. Caught in his own twisted web of desire, Kane missed his opportunity. She lifted the blaster again before he could act on the weakness. He massaged her until she was soaking his fingers. She trembled again, and he tried to keep himself ready to act on the next chance. Even now, her body was betraying her, rocking back and forth as she slid herself across his fingers. Kane shifted his weight, bracing for the moment when he could strip the hand blaster away. She kissed him as he moved, then sank her teeth into his bottom lip with enough force to slightly break the skin. He tasted the salt of his own blood and knew that if he moved, he'd lose his lip. Suddenly, she let go and shoved him away.
Enough.
Enough? Hell, we're only getting started.
Enough for now, Kane. You're very good at pleasing someone, as I knew you would be. But how are you at taking pleasure?
I take pleasure just fine.
Do you think so? We'll see.
She led the way back into the bedroom. The moonlight flowing in from the balcony lit only a few reflective surfaces in the room. At the end of the bed, she turned to face him.
Kane, I'll only accept your complete loyalty. You know I'll settle for nothing less.
Yeah.
Trepidation sent out waves of quiet unease through his mind. Something was wrong, but he didn't know what.
If you try to lie to me, I'll know.
She pointed the casule at him.
And you'll have to tell the truth now.
Suddenly, the darkness pervading the room went away. Kane blinked against the harsh light, then spotted the metal cage barely 3 feet high against the wall to the right. Inside the cage, her jade-green eyes burning at Kane, Bridget Baptiste was kneeling, gagged and bound, with her hands behind her. Kane kept his face immobile as he turned back to Ambika, who now stood naked beside the bed, the casule still in her hand.
She has nothing to do with this.
That's not the feeling I got. From what I've seen, she's the one thing, the one person, that would threaten your feelings for me. I couldn't have that, Kane, and I won't. So, Kane, how do you feel about me now?
A pair of sec men guarded the elevator up to Ambika's quarters. Grant walked toward them, Domi at his back. He carried the canvas bag containing Kane's armor, boots, and weapons in his left hand.
No one is permitted past this point.
Ambika sent for us.
The sec men looked at each other, then tried to bring their weapons up. In a blur, Grant lifted his arm, snapping the sin-eater into his palm. The 9mm bullet split the man's face. He was already dead when Domi's knife raked through his partner's throat.
Pull the bodies in after us.
Grant snapped the sin-eater back into its holster. He fisted the jacket of the man he'd killed and pulled him into the elevator cage, while Domi struggled to do the same. He wondered how Kane was making out. Kane ignored Bridget's eyes, not knowing what emotion was flashing through them. He couldn't afford to wonder, couldn't afford to get caught up in her plight and break his concentration. He gazed at Ambika and forced a smile.
You're a hard woman, Ambika. I guess I shouldn't have expected anything less. I should have known that you'd be this thorough.
Meaning you'd have gotten her to safety if you could have?
I wouldn't want to see her hurt.
That's not an answer I wanted to hear.
Maybe not. But you knew you were going to hear it when you involved her in this.
She was already involved.
Not this involved. I wasn't planning on a spectator. Is it more exciting for you to have someone watching?
It's more exciting if she watches.
Then let her watch.
It doesn't bother you?
It doesn't do anything for me. I've never been one for an audience at times like these.
It does something for me.
Okay. But if you keep talking, you're going to spoil the mood.
Only the intense desire the woman had created inside him kept him from losing his erection at the sight of Bridget in the cage. Somehow, he had to try to keep the two events unrelated in his mind, relying on the mag techniques he'd been taught to repress his own emotions. His sexual interest in Ambika didn't come out of anything emotional. It was pure lust, and at this point, that was no emotion at all.
You're either speaking truthfully, or you're the coldest man I've ever met.
Your call, Ambika. You're the one who pushed these stakes onto the table.
Strip.
Without hesitation, Kane removed his shirt and boots, unbuckled the belt, then opened the pants and stepped out of them. There was no hiding his erection. Chipping away at his desire was the image of the caged Bridget, and a word that echoed at the back of one part of his mind.
Anamkara.
It echoed through his consciousness and brought thoughts of betrayal and shame to him. Quickly, he forced them away before they affected his physical response to Ambika, which was the only thing that might get them out of here with their lives.
Let's see if you're truly as good at receiving pleasure as you are at giving it. You'll find that my interest in that subject is very thorough.
She dropped to her knees before him and placed the blaster's barrel up to his scrotum.
That's going to be distracting.
Not for long.
She kept her eyes locked on his as she slowly moved forward. Kane considered his options, thinking about the possibility of ramming a knee into her face before she could get a shot off. Wounded, he would be no match for her, and he and Bridget would both die as a result. With her reflexes, he didn't think there was time, so he stood there as she closed her lips over his hard length. Kane fought not to think about Bridget, letting the lizard mind at the back of his brain control all his autonomic responses. He almost had to remember to breathe as he fought to maintain the response Ambika was looking for, while not allowing himself to give in to the release his body was desperately craving. Despite his control, a powerful pressure began to build in his loins. Then Ambika pulled away, smiling up at him.
Get on the bed.
Without hesitation, Kane did as she ordered, deliberately not looking at Bridget in the metal cage. Lying on the bed, he watched as Ambika joined him, her muscles moving fluidly and her desire burning crimson beneath the skin of her breasts. Moving carefully, the Kasul centered on his chest, she straddled him. Then she very gradually lowered herself onto him. Once settled, she began slowly rising and falling on him, pressing onto him fully, then rising up almost far enough to disengage, only to lower herself again and again. It was going to be a roller coaster, Kane knew. He would ride it with her, and whichever one of them lost control first was doomed. His only hope now was that she had enough discipline to keep her trigger finger from tightening at the wrong moment. Trapped in the cage, Bridget could only watch in agony, seeing it in her eidetic memory even when she tried to turn away. Watching Ambika undulating on top of Kane, knowing he was giving her satisfaction, stabbed Bridget like a knife. As tears sprang into her eyes, she tried to distance herself emotionally from Kane and Ambika and the action on the bed. Kane arched his pelvis, meeting Ambika stroke for stroke, hammering his body against hers, watching her, willing her pent-up frustrations to make her lose this contest before his own determination faltered. Then her azure eyes locked on his gaze and grew wide, the expanding pupils reflecting the explosion building inside her. As they moved together, he felt her muscles begin to tighten around him, the spasm trapping him within her. She bucked hard and fast, finally tipping her senses over the edge as they rode out the pulsating quakes of release. As Ambika's back arched, her arms were drawn out to her sides, moving the Kasul off target, giving Kane his chance. Recovering his senses with difficulty, he seized the moment and went into action. He slapped Ambika's wrist and sent the blaster flying. He'd hoped to grab it before she could, but the blaster skidded across the tangled sheets and dropped to the floor. The blow caught Kane on the side of his face with enough force to send his head swimming. Ambika started choking him, her fingers locked around his windpipe with bruising force.
You dare spurn me, Kane? After I've given you everything? I'll kill you for that, you bastard. And I'll keep your seed, bear your child, and kill it too.
Almost on the point of blacking out, Kane drove his hands up between Ambika's, splitting them apart and breaking her chokehold on him. Her fist slammed against his jaw, cutting the inside of his cheek and flooding his mouth with blood. Reeling, barely hanging onto consciousness, Kane heaved up from the bed, managing to put her off balance for a moment. He deflected her next blow, feeling her weight come down across him. She landed with her breasts on his face. Incredibly, she wrapped her arms around the back of his head, pulling his face between her breasts. He tried to draw another breath and found he couldn't. Her flesh blocked his nose and mouth, suffocating him. Kane tried to push her away and couldn't. He balled up a fist and hit her in the side, but the rigid slabs of abdominal muscle absorbed the punishment. Her grip didn't loosen at all. Opening his mouth wider, he sucked in her flesh, then bit down, piercing her skin with his teeth. Her blood flowed over his face.
You bastard!
She pushed away and rammed the heel of her hand into his face. He thought for a moment she'd broken his nose. He grabbed the hair at the back of her head, knotting his fingers in the silvery strands. She cracked an elbow against his cheekbone, splitting the flesh there. The blow split the flesh of his cheek. He pulled at her hair, yanking her backward. She lifted a foot, releasing his hips, intending to drive it into his face. He shifted and she missed. He shoved her to the side, trying to get out from under her. Scrambling through the twisted sheets, he clawed for the bed's edge. He spotted the Kasul lying on the stone floor, even as the front door to the bedroom exploded open. 4 sec men rushed into the room from an adjoining room, all of them armed with assault rifles. Lying prone on the floor, aware that Ambika had thrown herself off the bed in the opposite direction, Kane plucked up the Kasul from the floor. He snapped off 2 shots, killing the lead sec man. He was pissed when he couldn't do more, because the hand blaster's recoil was too damn hard to control. Only 3 unexpended rounds left, if Ambika kept a full cylinder under the hammer. Kane rolled, throwing himself forward and coming up on 1 knee. He braced his gun hand with the other, targeting the 3 sec men. His first round spilled the guts from the next sec man. His second shot caught the 3rd sec man in the chest, flinging him into the surviving sec man, who raked the room with auto fire that tracked dangerously close to Bridget. Kane squeezed the trigger a final time. The .454 round slapped into the sec man's head and threw it backward, almost decapitating him. Just as Kane started to stand, Ambika came at him, bounding across the bed, naked and brandishing her long sword in her right hand. The edged steel glittered in the light.
Now you'll die, Kane!
The blow missed by inches. Still in motion, Kane picked up a chair and swung it at Ambika's head. The sword shattered it to kindling.
More Sekmen will be here in seconds, Kane. What are you going to do then?
Put them on the last train west.
Maybe I won't kill you, Kane. Maybe I'll just give you the life of an amputee and a eunuch. I'll keep you around just to hear the pitiful mewling you'll make.
Never happen.
We'll see.
Yeah! She came at him, swinging the sword. Kane fell to his back, sliding his legs forward. He tangled his feet with hers, tripping her, hoping she'd smack flat against the floor. She rolled and got to her feet as he was getting to his. She swung the sword again, forcing him to move. The blade sliced along his thigh before he could clear completely, and blood wept from the long wound in scarlet rivulets. Kane dropped to his knees, grabbed his discarded pants from the floor. As Ambika drew the sword to slash again, he whipped the belt free of the pants. He started to dodge, but she reversed the thrust, scoring along his ribs, leaving a trail of burning fire. She drew back again. Gripping the belt by the end, he popped the heavy ornate buckle at her face. As he'd figured, she didn't try to block it with the sword for fear of tangling the weapon. She slashed again, using both hands on the sword's hilt as she tried to cut his feet out from under him. He dove over the cut and rolled again, the belt strung out behind him. Then he cracked the belt forward, the heavy buckle skimming across the stone floor and striking sparks. It coiled around Ambika's right ankle even as she pulled her blade back into position. She tried to get away, but the leather drew taut as the buckle held. As he stood, getting his weight into the move, Kane yanked. Her foot came up and her head went down. Her muscular shoulder smacked into the stone. She started to rise, but before she made it to her full height, he punched her in the face, putting all of his weight behind it. The blow knocked her backward in a shuffling stumble, her sword clattering against the floor. She landed against the bed, bleeding from a cut lip. She pushed herself to her feet. Kane scooped up the sword and turned to face her with it, figuring she'd back down. Instead, she came straight at him, ignoring the sword. Still wanting her alive, Kane pulled the sword to the side, then slammed the sword pommel into her temple, dazing her. Remembering the incredible constitution the gene splicing had given her, Kane slammed the pommel into her head again. Ambika folded back and hit the floor. Cautiously, watching the woman for any signs of movement, Kane stood on his trembling legs, having to use the sword as support. He stared across the room at Bridget, noticing the tears that streaked her face. Guilt stung him then, but his instinct for survival got him in motion. There was no way he was going to leave the nerve gas and other biological agents with Ambika if he could help it. He dropped the sword and walked to the dead sec men, grabbing one of the assault rifles. He inserted a fresh clip, then approached Bridget in the cage. Her jade gaze had been fixed on him, but when he looked directly at her, she turned away from him, unwilling to meet his eyes. He dropped to his knees and reached through the bars to remove the tape over her mouth. He pulled it free tenderly, feeling her recoil at his touch.
Damn it, Baptiste. Hold still so I can get this tape off.
She froze. Part of Kane's attention remained on Ambika as he stripped the tape from Bridget's face.
Where are the keys to get you out of there?
The vanity. She put the keys to the cage and the handcuffs in there.
Kane retreated to the vanity and opened drawers until he found the key ring.
That's it.
He worked through the keys and found the one for the cage. It opened easily, and he helped Bridget out.
You might want to think about getting dressed.
I have. I'll do it as soon as there's time.
He unsnapped the cuffs and took them over to Ambika. Working quickly, he fastened them around her wrists, trapping her hands behind her back. Hurriedly, he reached for the clothes he'd worn, while Bridget grabbed an assault rifle. She worked the action, then took up a bandolier of extra magazines and draped it over one shoulder.
You okay, Baptiste?
Of course, why wouldn't I be?
I just thought maybe Ambika would have done something to you.
Why?
Damn it, Baptiste. This woman's psychotic.
That's why the pair of you seem to get along so well.
She's got nerve gas and other biological weapons on this island somewhere, Baptiste. She was intending to use them against Cobaltville. No matter how Lakesh feels about it, we're not allowing that.
Bridget glanced down at the unconscious woman.
She's even worse than I thought she was.
Yeah. Look, what I did...
I don't want to talk about it, Kane. Let's just get out of here.
Kane didn't bother dressing Ambika. Using the leather belt to bind her ankles together, he gagged her as well. Even then, he wasn't certain she couldn't cause him problems during their escape. Kane lifted his assault rifle, waving Bridget to the other side of the door.
Kane, we're clear in here.
Grant came through the door and glanced down at Ambika, then at the rest of the room.
Who kicked who out of bed? Shut up, Grant.
Grant looked contrite, but not much. He glanced at Bridget, but didn't say anything. Then back at Kane.
Got your stuff here.
He handed over the bag. Kane took it and began suiting up at once. With the armor starting to go back in place, he felt more in control than he had since they'd arrived in the Isles of the Lioness.
Anybody know you're here?
Maybe 7 sec men, but the next person they're going to tell isn't of this life.
Where's Domi?
Watching the door. You know how you want to handle this?
She's got a private elevator in here. Down below is an old Chinese sub we need to send to the bottom. Then we need to scout out the nerve gas depot she's got and see what we can do about that, too.
Incendiaries. If you can get a fire hot enough around the biologicals when you blow them, the heat can cause chemical changes that might render them inert.
Sounds like the best chance we've got.
She's not going to leave the way unguarded.
That's fine, but we're going to need 1 or 2 of the sec men we find intact. When we put the torch to this place, I want to give everybody living here a chance to get out. Let's do it.
Kane hefted Ambika's unconscious body over his shoulder. They piled into the elevator. When the door opened onto the cavern, Grant led the way out, using the helmet's passive night sight capabilities, as well as the motion sensor strapped to his wrist. His Sin Eater was in his hand and at the ready. Kane went next, flanked by Bridget and Domi.
Guards. I see them.
Kane put the unconscious woman down and went forward, depending on the black polycarbonate armor to keep him unseen in the darkness. The sec men stood on either side of the cavern, guarding the submarine. Tunnels led back in both directions. He hadn't seen the guards earlier when he'd toured with Ambika, and he guessed that she'd ordered them into hiding. Maybe the tunnels had also been disguised behind false walls, because he definitely didn't remember them either.
The close ones first.
Done.
They stretched their silenced blaster hands out, using their other hands to support their arms. The subsonic bullets chopped into the closest sec men who slumped to the ground. They eyed the other sec men.
Remember, we need at least one of these guys alive.
Yours. I'm through being peaceable.
Kane moved forward, making sure he gave Grant shooting room. He paused at the corner, the Sin Eater raised.
Now.
He stepped around the corner. Grant's rounds took the sec man on the right full in the face, destroying his features in crimson ruin and spinning him around. The other sec man tried to bring his weapon up, but Kane showed him the business end of the Sin Eater.
Don't. Listen to me, and you get to live.
The man put his weapon down. Kane closed on him, the Sin Eater never wavering.
I'm looking for the weapons Ambika took from the sub, and you're going to show me where they are.
All right, sure. Down there.
The guard pointed to a set of double doors down the hall. Kane used the key ring he'd taken from Ambika's room to open the doors. Then carried Ambika inside over his shoulder as Grant took over their newly acquired prisoner. Bridget found a light switch and turned it on, and they stared at the dozens of canisters stacked on wooden pallets around the large room. In no way did they look as threatening as they actually were. The room was also a conventional weapons dump. Racks of rifles and hand blasters lined one of the walls.
Got plenty of Plas X here, and timers. We're good to go.
Then let's get it done.
Minutes later, covered with sweat from the humidity trapped in the caverns and from the nervous energy expended in setting the explosives, they finished setting the last of the detonation devices. Back out in the cavern, Kane used a portable backpack acetylene torch to burn through the metal chains holding the sub to the flotation devices. He started at the back end, watching as the flukes disappeared beneath the dark water. Within minutes, walking along the remaining flotation devices was no longer possible because the sub's weight dragged them under. Only the cables anchoring it to the wall remained. He burned through them in short order. The yawning abyss below the sub slowly drank it down. Kane and Grant had used every bit of the plasex they'd found. When the caverns blew, the detonation was going to be something short of hell on Earth. Kane turned to the Sekhman they'd taken prisoner.
We're heading to the docks now. You show us the fastest way there, then you'll get the chance to get everybody out of here. You have 1 hour, then we blow everything you've seen here. Do you understand?
The man nodded fearfully.
Also, my friend and I are good at this sort of thing. Those explosives are booby-trapped. Even if you've got somebody clever enough to undo what we've done, it's going to take more time than we're giving you. And if we hear one tiny boom, the whole thing goes up. No more hour, just boom.
What the hell is going on?
Kane glanced over the side of the sloop John B. and spotted Christensen running toward the dock. Domi had been sent back into the main building and told to find the ship's captain and crew. Most of them, as it turned out, had remained on the ship at Christensen's orders.
We're pulling out. You got 42 minutes to get your crew shipshape and get us outside this island before one of the biggest explosions you've ever seen takes place.
Kane finished bolting a 20-millimeter cannon to the railing. It was a makeshift job, but he knew it would handle being used at least for a time. Grant strapped another one on the opposite side of the ship. They'd raided weapons from other ships, killing guards as they'd needed in order to acquire supplies. The Sandcat's twin machine guns would add further firepower to the munitions they'd taken. Kane had also put some of the crew to work, under threats, stripping other guns from the nearby ships. The sloop John B. was a hell of a lot better equipped than it had been when it put into port in the Isles of the Lioness.
I thought you liked it here.
Changed my mind.
Yeah, looks like everybody did.
Christensen pointed at the line of small boats already heading out to sea through the channel cut through the rock.
Move it. Time's gonna work against us pretty soon. Take whoever you need to get us underway, and I want the rest of the crew you can spare to help out with the weaponry fits.
Bridget stepped inside the captain's quarters where Kane had left Ambika. The woman, still naked, was handcuffed to the main support beam on the wall, the handcuff links draped over the beam. She'd been unconscious before, lying on the bed when Bridget had last looked in on her. Ambika was awake now, sitting on the edge of the bed, her arms slightly above and to her side, secured by the handcuffs.
We're on your ship, aren't we?
Yes. How are you feeling?
Do you care?
Not much.
You're jealous of me, aren't you?
Bridget knew that part of her was. The part that was irrational enough to care about Kane. Or maybe it was the part of her that was somehow bound to Kane.
No, I just don't like you. You're a killer, only a step removed from a cold heart or a baron.
Ambika smiled. Her unnatural metabolism had already cured the wounds Kane had given her.
Yes, you are. You've never had him the way I had him.
I've never wanted him that way.
Liar. You forget. I saw your face when I took him to my bed. I watched you as I climbed on top of him. And I saw your face when I started to fuck him.
You're disgusting. Watching people couple isn't something I care to do.
You couldn't take your eyes off of us.
Now who's lying?
Even so, memory of what Kane and I shared is going to haunt your dreams forever.
You didn't share anything. Kane took advantage of the only weakness you had, your arrogance.
Can you forgive him for that? Make your peace with what happened?
There's nothing to forgive, nothing to make peace with. Kane beat you with the only weapon he had.
Yes, a blunt instrument. And you admire him for that?
Surprisingly, Bridget realized that perhaps part of her did respect Kane's bravery and tactics under the circumstances.
Not many men would have been capable of doing what he did. Nor would they have been able to remain as focused.
Oh, I certainly had all of his attention the whole time. That's something you'll always be too timid to ask of him. I can see it in your face.
Bridget turned red, embarrassed. The woman saw through her too clearly. It made her angry at herself that Ambika could get through her defenses so easily.
You didn't have his attention. You had the same concentration he gives to any other enemy he has in his gun sights.
He didn't kill me.
Yet. He needed you alive to get off the island.
That was his mistake. Attack. Don't hesitate. I want them all dead.
What?
Suddenly, understanding dawned with cold dread inside Bridget. The warrior queen wasn't talking to her.
Subcutaneous radio transponder.
I've found my body is surprisingly adept at handling all kinds of bio-friendly tech wear.
Bridget whirled out of the room, locking it behind her, and ran toward the prow deck to warn Kane. Once topside, she glanced to either side of the sloop John B., spotting a few other ships in the distance. Then one of the big warships fleeing the island turned toward the cargo ship, its sails blossoming in the night air.
Kane, she's got a transponder. She's called in an attack.
Kane spun toward Bridget, then looked out where she pointed toward the approaching ship less than 400 yards away.
We won't be able to outrun it. Then we fight.
Lights lit up the warship's deck. Kane used his field glasses to see the crew scurrying around to carry out their captain's orders.
If we have to. But if we try to field a protracted engagement, then we're going to get the shit kicked out of us.
Yeah, but even with the extra weapons we've moved onto this ship, we're not going to last long.
Then we're going to have to double down on a one percenter.
What have you got in mind?
You're not going to like it. When the warship comes alongside, we're going to keep our own blasters quiet for a time, not fire till we see the fucking whites of their eyes. I'm guessing they'll try to grapple onto us, pull us in and board us. When they do, we'll open up. Then you and I will force our way across and drop a bomb down the hold.
That's got to be the craziest thing I've ever heard.
You come up with anything better, I'm willing to listen. Domi, go get what we need.
The albino scurried off as Kane walked along the ship's railing toward Christensen. The pursuing warship had already cut the distance to less than 200 yards. His cron showed that less than 6 minutes remained till the Plasex back at the munitions dump on the island went off.
Christensen, they're going to overtake us.
No shit, I was just getting used to the idea that we might actually make it.
If you can handle this ship, we just might.
Domi ran up and handed Kane a package.
Got all we got, no more.
Kane looked at the white-gray mass wrapped in oily papers.
What the fuck is that?
Plasex. When that other ship grapples us, we're going to shove this down her throat.
If you blow the bottom of that ship out, she's going to go down like a hemorrhoidal duck.
That's when your boarding crews will start cutting the lines to get us free again.
What if you and Grant don't make it back before we cut loose?
That's our problem. It's the only chance we've got, and we're out of time for a miracle.
The warship drew closer. Kane hunkered down beside the sloop John B.'s railing, sweating inside the polycarbonate armor. Less than 4 minutes remained before the munitions dump exploded on the island. Then the warship butted into the sloop John B. hard enough to heel her over in the water. Kane hung on grimly, retaining his balance with effort. He carried a pump shotgun in one hand, an assault rifle slung over one shoulder, and the Sin Eater holstered on his forearm. Ambika's sword ran down his back in the scabbard she'd carried it in. He glanced at Grant beside him, similarly outfitted except for the sword. He carried a double-bitted axe instead, for the time when they ran out of bullets. Domi and Baptiste were in the Sandcat.
Domi.
Here.
You keep it calm until we give the word, no matter what.
I will.
The warship butted the sloop John B. again, heeling her over harder. Men slid out of position across the deck, and small arms fire from the warship pursued them. The first of the grappling hooks flipped over the side. Kane peered over the railing, watching as the warship neared to within feet. Some of the sec men threw a gangplank across the distance. It had hooks that held it securely to the cargo ship, while a crew held the other end.
Now!
Kane and Grant sprang up together. Kane took the lead, leveling the shotgun at a small cluster of sec men getting ready to board. He fired, and the burst of double-aught buckshot cleared the gangplank. Even the crew abandoned it, letting it slide sideways. Kane drove his feet hard against it, feeling Grant thundering along in his wake. He saw the end going over the edge of the warship's railing.
Jump!
He threw himself forward, landing just over the railing on his knees. Men rushed at him with their weapons upraised. He triggered the shotgun again, knocking down the men in front of him and clearing the deck for a moment. Then small arms fire opened up and slammed into the mag armor. He glanced over his shoulder when he realized Grant hadn't landed beside him, fearful that the big man had fallen into the ocean. Then he saw Grant's gloved hands clinging to the warship's railing. But the two ships were closing on each other again, threatening to smash Grant between them.
Shit!
Grant hauled himself up, pushing at the ship's side with his feet. He rolled over the ship's railing just before the two ships slammed together again. A brief lull in the gunfire followed the collision. Kane remained on his feet with difficulty. He pulled the shotgun up again as a machine gunner on top of the aft deck opened up on the sloop John B. The heavy slugs ripped long splinters from the cargo ship's deck and punched new holes in the walls and trim and sailcloth. Kane fired, riding out the recoil as the double-aught blast ripped the machine gunner from his post. The Browning machine gun spun crazily. Then Grant was at Kane's side, blasting away at the warship's crew. Once the shotgun blew back empty, Kane dropped it and took up the assault rifle. Heavy slugs smashed into him, knocking him from his feet as the deck pitched because of the waves and because of the grappling lines connecting it to the sloop John B. The warship crew surged forward, intending to take advantage of Kane's fall. He rolled and brought the assault rifle up, holding the trigger down and emptying a clip in a long burst. Kane forced himself to his feet, listening to Grant's assault rifle cut loose, even as his own locked back empty. He let the assault rifle hang from his shoulder sling and popped the Sin Eater into his hand with a twist of his wrist.
Stop him!
Kane spun instantly, tracking the voice. If the captain or commander succeeded in whipping his troops into readiness, getting back to the sloop John B. could prove impossible. He lined up the shot, then squeezed off three rounds. At least one of them hit the man in the face and snapped his head back. Even as his corpse fell, Kane turned and sprinted across the blood-slicked deck to the open hold. He finished off the Sin Eater's magazine, then started in with the sword, hacking into anyone who got in his way. The sword jumped in his grip as it struck bone, but his opponents fell before him. Kane headed for cover, pulled the Plasex package from its pouch, armed the timer, and dropped it into the hold. Before he could get moving, the munitions dump in the main island blew, drawing every eye. Even Kane watched as a huge fireball of orange and black spewed high into the air. Kane ran for the gangplank, stretching between the two ships, slapping into Grant as he went and moving the other men into action as well. He keyed up the radio in his helmet.
Domi! Keep them off our asses! Baptiste, get ready to lock and load!
Kane watched the gangplank suddenly twist away and fall into the water between the two ships.
Fuck! Jump! It's the only chance we've got!
He'd already lost count of how many seconds had elapsed on the Plasex timer. Bullets hammered his back, turned aside by the polycarbonate armor. Then he had a foot on the railing and was leaping for the sloop John B. In the air, spanning the distance with not much to spare, not even sure he was going to make it, he heard the Sandcat's machine guns open up and watched as the door to the captain's quarters burst open. Ambika staggered out, still naked and blood-smeared, her silvery hair in wild disarray. Without hesitation, she headed for Bridget. Kane landed on the sloop John B.'s deck as the cargo ship's sailors surged to the railing under Bridget's direction. None of them noticed Ambika's approach. Moving quickly, Kane placed himself in front of Bridget. Ambika's speed and strength drove him from his feet, knocking him to the deck. She stomped on the sword blade and kicked it from his grasp.
Baptiste!
Kane rose and moved toward Bridget as Ambika recovered her sword and swung it in her direction. Bridget turned, spotting the danger too late to avoid it. The sword whistled for her neck. Kane shoved his left arm up between the sword and Bridget, holding it at an angle, aware that if he got that angle wrong, the sword would probably shear off his arm. The polycarbonate wasn't built for such treatment. The sword struck a glancing blow, striking sparks from the armor as it arced up and over Bridget's head, cutting a lock of the blowing red-gold hair. Kane stepped in front of Bridget, drawing the combat knife from his boot as Ambika prepared to strike again. Before she could swing, though, Bridget stepped around Kane and fired her Uzi from the hip. The stream of bullets from the Uzi chopped into Ambika's body, driving her back to the railing. Her azure eyes burned fires of hate. The woman's face was a mask of dried blood. Bridget's second burst knocked Ambika over the railing. Kane watched the woman fall. Then the explosion aboard the warship drowned everything out. Kane realized the sloop John B. was heeling over toward the warship. He watched the other ship wallowing in the sea, taking on water in seconds, starting the final plunge to the bottom of the Pacific Ocean.
Get the damn grappling ropes cut or we're going down with those sons of bitches!
He moved forward and hacked with his combat knife at the nearest rope. Grant fell in at his side, bringing the double-bitted axe down with a headsman's skill. The ropes fell away rapidly as the rest of the crew pitched in. Seconds later, the sloop John B. was free and surging forward under her own wind again. Kane watched as the warship foundered and swiftly sank beneath the waves, realizing how close it had all been. He turned to Bridget.
Are you okay?
Yes. What about your arm?
The armor held.
It might not have.
I knew it would.
The look in her jade eyes clearly indicated that she didn't believe him, that she'd known the risk he'd taken, even if she wasn't sure why. Kane stripped his helmet off.
Did Ambika get you to take those cuffs off while you were in there, Baptiste?
No, Kane. I was already a believer in how dangerous she was before you tried to tell me. You got a lot closer to her than I ever would have.
Look at this.
Gran held up a bloody piece of meat with the bone showing.
Bitch gnawed her own thumb off. Once it was gone, she slipped her hand through the cuff like it was nothing.
The callous act sat like ice in Kane's stomach. He turned back to the ocean, studying the waves to see if he could spot Ambika. Though he looked for a long time, even till the Isles of the Lioness were out of sight, he never did spot her body. Seeing it, he felt certain, would have helped ease some of the cold anxiety that threaded down his spine. He should have put a stake through her heart before she'd gone over the side. Kane was still awake on the deck, smoking one of the cigars he and Grant had packed in the Sandcat, When dawn broke to the east and painted orange lines across the Pacific Ocean's white-capped green surface, Bridget and Domi slept in the Sandcat, both of them totally exhausted. Grant had offered to split the watch with them, neither of them quite trusting Christensen or his crew. Kane hadn't been able to sleep because there'd been too many troubling thoughts. He'd talked with Grant in the morning hours, but neither of them had brought up the thing that bothered him most of all. There was only one person he could talk to, and he wasn't sure if that was going to happen. Grant had finally wandered away when the cooking smells from the galley spilled out onto the deck, and men began going to their breakfast in shifts. Kane continued smoking the cigar as he watched gulls soar in the sky, then dive down to pick up whatever refuse in the water caught their eye. Lakesh hadn't been happy when they told him what happened last night, but he knew he was in no position to be argumentative. Kane was sure they hadn't heard the end of it. Taking a final puff on the cigar, he pushed himself to his feet and walked to the railing. He flipped the butt out into the water, watching it spin away. Maybe things were over with, just like the cigar. Then he noticed the shadow on the deck at his feet as the ship bore slightly to the southwest to take advantage of the wind for a while. He looked up and saw Bridget standing there. Instantly, he grew uncomfortable.
Morning, Baptiste.
Good morning.
Sleep well?
Not as well as I'd have liked. You didn't get any sleep, did you?
I will.
It's a long trip back to the redoubt. We should be able to make the jump back to Cerberus from there.
I'll be rested by then.
Kane wanted to leave it alone. Didn't want to mention it at all, but it kept troubling him.
Baptiste.
They looked at each other.
Let me go first.
Okay.
He lifted his head and made himself look her in the eye.
I'm sorry you had to see what you did back there. That wasn't what I wanted. Not for you and not for me. I just wanted you to know that.
I do know that, Kane. You did what you did so we'd all survive. It hurt watching. Maybe more than you could ever know, even though I understood. Maybe I didn't understand then, but I did later.
I just didn't want it to change things.
She smiled, but the effort was sad and kind of empty.
Things changing around us, Kane. I think that's the only constant we've ever had in this life or any other we might have shared. Maybe that's all we can hope for. As long as things keep on changing, we go on living. And that's better than the alternative.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
He turned away from her, feeling somehow strangely ashamed. Then her soft hand covered his calloused one. When he turned to face her, her eyes locked with his.
In spite of all those changes and the fear of the unknown that goes along with them, despite the fact that we seem to argue over everything, I want you to know that you're the one constant outside myself that I rely on, Kane. And that's not easy for me to admit.
I don't know what to say.
So you may have lost something last night. We may have lost something. But I wanted you to know that because I realized it for myself as well.
Kane didn't say anything. He didn't dare for fear of saying the wrong thing and spoiling the moment. So he stood there in the quiet of the morning, on a ship in a sea far from anything he was calling home these days, and he enjoyed the warmth of her hand on his. It would change, he knew, but the memory of that quietly shared moment would be his to keep forever. Outlander's Wreath of Fire is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2000, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, Karen Carbone, Tim Carlin, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Elizabeth Demery, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Eric Messner, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Script adaptation by Cheryl Hayes. Directed by Terence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton. The Outlander's theme was composed by Norman Vandersleis. Additional original music by Brian Patton, Nathaniel Perry, and Dan Smith. If you enjoyed Outlanders, be sure to look for James Axler's Deathlands, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
Captain Harris Serrano, scion of a long and illustrious line of officers, has been forced to resign in disgrace from Spacefleet. Her new assignment, civilian captain of the luxury yacht, Sweet Delight.
Tell us about your new captain. Why you choose such a Spacefleet officer?
I thought an officer from the regular space service would know how to maintain discipline and follow my orders.
Captain, I'd like to speak to you.
Don't you ever come on my bridge again, mister.
But I want to apologize.
You can apologize to my crew for nearly getting us all killed. And then you can go away and not come back.
Captain!
What is it?
Computer says dangerous chemical. Sulfur something. Someone was there but isn't moving.
Get those backups down here. Make sure they have their helmets locked on. I'm going in.
Damn military arrogance. She hit me! The owner's family! Just you wait. I'll get even with her.
Bandon Field. Permission to land and refuel. Number 002413. We're low on fuel, Bandon Field.
Permission denied.
Look out!
Captain Serrano, how nice to have you aboard.
Don't miss the launch of Graphic Audio's gripping new space adventure, The Serrano Legacy, Book 1, Part 1, Hunting Party.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
The First Mountain Man 5, Cheyenne Challenge.
Pete, you've outlived your welcome at this rendezvous. Hell, and all the big empty for that matter. I reckon all these fellas here will go along with me when I say we want you out of camp before nightfall.
You're not even dry behind the ears yet. Who are you to tell me that?
I'm the man who's an inch from slitting your gizzard.
Turn me loose. I'll show this whippersnapper the error of his ways.
Oh, we'd be mighty pleased if you did.
Yellowstone Frank Parks, a close friend of Preacher's, released the arm he held.
All right, Preacher. Get ready for the ass-kicking of your life.
10 years ago, the legendary mountain man Preacher taught a violent lesson to Eastern bad man Ezra Pease when he ran the outlaw out of town. But Pease and his trail scum are back, shooting up the big empty to nail Preacher's hide to a tree.
Looks like we found the wrong place to be in.
The riffraff swarmed down the hill into the meadow where Beartooth and Preacher lay. They had 100 yards of open ground to cross to reach the mountain men.
They're getting in pistol range.
Two shaggy-haired louts appeared around the side of a large oak tree.
How many more of them?
Beartooth sighted in on a burly ruffian and homespun who zigzagged toward him.
Been too busy to count.
I'll make it 6.
4 after that one.
You're enjoying this, ain't you?
Well, it ain't my favorite mess to be caught up in. Still, there's something to be said for it. Sure keeps the blood pumping through your veins.
Beartooth groped for another pistol.
We'd best put an end to this right sudden. There might be more of these ragbags out there.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
The one called Quint showed himself then, along with 4 others.
You ain't got a chance, Preacher. We got you cold.
Now that's plumb unfriendly.
Preacher sighted in and fired the first barrel. Bark sprayed from the trunk of a big old silver-tipped fir. Quint jerked back behind the tree for protection. Preacher took aim on another of the misbegotten brethren.
See Nixon, Preacher?
Sure enough. We'll give him a little time. He'll show in the open in a bit. That prediction proved true some 2 minutes later as Quint gained more altitude up the slope of boulders. Preacher had readied himself with a fancy French sporting rifle, and he popped the cap when the hole of Quint's left shoulder filled his sight. Both of the survivors had had enough.
They had to be Pease's men. Something's gonna have to be done.
Yeah, and if and I know you, it ain't gonna be pleasant for our Mr. Pease.
Preacher's riding to teach Pease one final deadly lesson. But he may be too late, because Pease's vicious dealings have fired up an all-out Indian war.
It was about 10 o'clock when Preacher first saw blacker shapes flitting from one bit of sparse cover to another. It didn't take long to figure out that it wasn't no pack of coyotes or wolves. One of them reared up abruptly and drew taut a bowstring. Another foeman quickly took his place. The hostiles were in too close for rifles, so Preacher ignored him to get one of his four-barrel blitzers into action. By then, the drivers, led by Buck Dempsey, had opened up on the invading Indians. Preacher took his eyes off the assault and cut a quick look around the compound. He turned back just in time. Preacher had barely turned the next barrel into line when the young Pawnee rushed at him.
Pour it on, boys!
Now, with hard-riding death on both sides, Preacher, along with his old friends Beartooth, Dupree, and Nighthawk, are heading straight into lead-flying, scalp-smashing hell. Don't miss the chance to blaze a trail to adventure with Preacher in the first Mountain Man 5, Cheyenne Challenge.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.